Chapter 40. I pick up a tablet to write back, and Aurora grabs it from me. No. Let me. She taps out, "What the fuck, Larson? Is this another one of your tricks?" Larson does not smile or chuckle or roll his eyes. He's dead serious. I've never seen him with that look on his face. Wait. What the hell is Larson doing in that dome? I guess he's been living in there for 3 weeks, spying on us and waiting for us to kill or maim ourselves, which we did, so he could play God. Yeah, I'm talking about you, Larson. Are you hearing this, Larson? She taps the wall. He shakes his head. His tablet reads, "No comlink, no power, no tricks. Put on your suits." Why? PPMM reversed in both domes, losing air fast. Shut it down. Can't. Locked out. Aurora taps furiously. Locked out? Shut it all down? You made this, idiot. She jabs a finger at him twice for emphasis. Larson hangs his head. Taps out one more message. Sabotage. Holy shit. That single word sends us all back to being a coop full of freaked out chickens, falling over each other to rush back to our shelter domes to get our spacesuits and an extra hour of oxygen. But I can't get into my dome. I shout across to the others, "Hey, can anyone get in?" "No!" It's pitch black. We have no power. Our oxygen is running out. Again, that's twice, but who's counting? We can't get to our spacesuits, and the very last thing the viewers around the world saw before their TVs went blank was Aurora exposing me as a filler. This finale could be going slightly better. We run back to the wall, and I tap a message. "Power out. Why dome still active and not letting us in?" Larson, now in full suit with helmet, types back, "PPMM like inertial drive, without power, retains current state indefinitely for safety. Someone reversed airflow, then cut power. Backup generators cut too. We're locked out. Put on suits." Can't. Suits in shelter domes. Larson makes another face I haven't seen yet. The, "I can't believe I didn't think of that" face. Apparently, in the main dome, they had a separate locker or something for their suits, because all of them have theirs on. And they forgot that we kept ours in our shelter domes. Geniuses. The only one with a suit on is Aurora from her terraforming presentation, which decidedly doesn't help the rest of us. Larson turns to Captain Daniels and a couple of other techs, and they debate something. "May be hardware slash software intrusion," Larson messages. "AI virus, on daughter board or such. Robin, can you find it?"
"Wasn't he watching?"
"You're not Robin, duh." "Not the time, Aurora." I tap back. "In the CPU?" Larson nods. Albert and Benji and I make our way to the back of the CPU, and I remember. The wrench. Someone was here. But how did the cameras not see them? How did the CPU not know? I lay down, scooch in under the unit, looking up at the underside of the CPU shell. And sure enough, three bolts missing. The access panel above me is being held in by just one bolt. Whoever did this was in a rush. "Benji, get me the half-inch wrench." He's back in an instant. "Albert, get under here with me." I unbolt the panel, and a world of technology beyond my comprehension stares me in the face. I have no idea what I'm looking for. Albert points to the rows of motherboards. "If it's a daughter board, it'll look like a puzzle piece out of place, maybe hanging off by a wire. There." He reaches in and touches it lightly. "I'm going to pluck it out. Are you telling me that because you hope I have a better idea?" I'm getting lightheaded. "Stop talking and take the damn thing out, Albert." He's right, though. My eyes are starting to get a little wonky, and I have to shake my head to clear it. Our air is running out faster than I thought. "Hurry. I already did it." He shows me the culprit, A tiny circuit board, yes, about the size of a puzzle piece. So, now what? I slide back out, hitting my head because, of course, and run a little woozy now back to the wall. We hold out the little puzzle piece and shout, "Now what?" More furious silent debate in the other dome. Then Larson turns to me, and I swear to God, he shrugs. His message? Thought it might stop the virus.
Thought it might? You're kidding me!
I grab the tablet from Aurora, for a moment wondering at the coincidence of her being the only one with a suit on, but quickly shaking the thought off. Aurora, clip your helmet on. You'll have plenty of air. Then grab everyone and do that tarp thing again with the BAG and the outlet vent. If you grab one of the lifts, they have their own power source. You can connect the leads from the battery to the BAG and restore its power at least for a few minutes. You know how, right? She just stands there, sort of stunned. I guess she doesn't have a snappy, sarcastic, rageful response ready. You know how, right? She bolts, shouting at the others and getting the tarp ready. I type out a message to Larson. What if I try sudden electric current to PPMM? Possible, but PPMM in rigid state, only letting out oxygen molecules. Nothing else can penetrate. Nothing, huh? I don't even bother to write back. He's obviously never seen what lift forks can do at 40 miles an hour. I run over to the nearest lift, thanking God it has its own power. Wake up. How may I help you, Robin Smith? I almost laugh. The lift hadn't gotten the memo yet. Is there a way to route power into the forks themselves? Electrify them? Hesitation. No. Damn. I do not know what damn means, Robin Smith. It means I'm probably going to electrocute myself. I hop out of the cab and rip open the battery panel. It's massive, with several positive and negative leads. Hop back in the cab. Heads-up display, the least necessary wiring. I need 2 lengths, 10 feet. Least necessary? I don't know, interior lighting, anything. The lift highlights the wiring diagram for the interior lighting. I duck under the dash, prying open the plastic panels, and start ripping wires out. Better hurry. Breathing is getting harder. I can't see straight. Robin Smith, that wire was not part of the wiring for... Silence. Whoops. Oh well, no time to get the AI back online. I grab a screwdriver and rubber gloves out of the toolbox, go around to the side, attach a wire to each battery lead, then, extremely slowly and delicately, loosen a screw on each fork housing and fasten the wire. I have created a monster. Anything that touches these forks will be instantly electrocuted. I smile to myself because this isn't the first time I've done this exact thing. When we were 16 or so, Dougie and I were learning about electrostatic induction. Well, I was learning about it and Dougie was nodding his head between naps. And I decided to make a lift into a giant capacitor to see if we could light up fluorescent bulbs between the forks. It worked, but it also caused a minor explosion. Phil City Security called it major, but no one died or even got hurt, so really? Landing Dougie and me in suspension and a month of docked pay, and a forced part-time job repairing the lifts for the rest of my life. But it was worth it to see Dougie's yelps of glee and singed eyebrows. I liked to think Nana was actually impressed, because instead of grounding me for 50 years, she just muttered, "Teenagers," and took away my TV privileges for a week. But America Sings was on that night. We loved watching it together, and she couldn't help herself, and we wound up cheering on Esther Jones into the finals and eating way too much popcorn. Nana can be such a pushover. Whoa, focus, paper, you're getting lightheaded, and don't touch anything metal. I gingerly climb into the cab, moving the lift into place as far from the point of contact I want as possible. It's not a straight run, and the AI's down, so I can't just send it at full speed and jump out. I'll have to steer this thing until the last moment and try to make a dramatic leap to safety. Or die. I'm probably going to die. I punch the dash to maximum, and the lift builds up to 20, 30, then 40 miles an hour. I only have seconds to say a silent prayer before it hits the wall. I say I'm sorry to everyone, my family for putting their lives in danger, to Aurora for letting her believe I was someone I'm not, to my mother for I don't know what, but I feel I owe her an apology too, to everyone I've deceived with this whole charade. Please, everyone, forgive me. I've learned my lesson. A little late, admittedly, but I learned it. I exhale and feel much better, and realize that I have about 3 nanoseconds to jump. I leap from the cab of the lift, watching in slow motion as it smashes into the wall of PPMM spectacularly, but crumpling like a sheet of tinfoil. Crap. Larson was right. Even a lift at 40 miles an hour can't pierce this stuff. Wait, a little flash. It did pierce the wall. Just enough. And then an explosion, like a bolt of lightning, rips through the sky above me. The entire dome flashes white hot, blinding me. Darkness. Then another sound. The rush of air into the space and something like a million crystals falling from the heavens. No, wait. It is a million crystals falling from the heavens. Little chunks of PPMM are about to kill me. I have just enough time to curl up into a ball protecting my head when I'm pelted with the equivalent of a full hailstorm in a matter of seconds. I picture the infinite small bruises I'll have tomorrow morning over my entire body. But I'll be alive tomorrow morning. Damn, that feels good. I breathe the air in deep, feeling the rush of a new life, and kiss the red dust on the ground. I hear footsteps, and Claire asks, "Is she alive?" I turn over and grin at them all. I'm alive. Then I remember the moments before all this, when the world learned who I really was, and the Gitanos' collective jaws dropped to the floor, and they cocked their handguns. And I frown. For the moment. Benji reaches out his hand. "Let's go help the others." "I'm sorry, Benji. All of you, I hope you can forgive me." Benji nods. "I can't speak for everyone, but we're not dead. You did that. That counts for something." Mike shakes his head. "No. Sorry, Robin, or whatever your name is. It's not enough." He walks away toward the other dome. Claire follows him, whispering, "A filler? That's so strange." And Aurora follows them both, silent. After a little while alone, I walk to the other dome, little chunks of PPMM crunching underfoot. Zach Larson, behind the main dome's wall, in full spacesuit, holds up his tablet. "Do you know how much that dome cost?" I honestly can't tell if he's trying to make light of the situation. He doesn't smile, or wink, or nod, but his eyes are telling me something. If I had to put it into words, my guess is that they're saying, "You lied to me, and we have a sabotage problem. But you kept a bunch of people from dying on my watch, and I won't be going to jail for multiple counts of negligent homicide. So thanks for that." 3 transports finally arrive, and a backup generator crew rushes off one of them. Within minutes, the main dome is powered back on, and its hostages are set free. Ted and his cameraman run over as Larson slips through the PPMM membrane and unlatches his helmet. "Mr. Larson, what happened?" "That thing is on, correct?" He points to the camera's little red light. Ted nods. "Good. This young woman has something to say."
"I do?"
Ted fidgets. "Sir, people are watching. Like, a historic number of people. Shouldn't you be...
Give her a microphone."
He turns to me.
"You have some explaining to do."
Ted hands me a mic. The world is watching.
I'm
Sorry. I try to hand the mic back to Larson. He pushes it in, back in front of my face. I want to ask for forgiveness 1,000 times, but suddenly guilt isn't what I feel most. Something else is rising in me, some other feeling I've never had. Yes, I am sorry. Sorry that I lied to get on this show. My name is not Robin Smith. Actually, technically, it is Robin, but my Nana, well, that's a completely different story. My throat constricts. It doesn't want the next words to come out, but I force them. My name is Paper. Paper Faris. I take a deep breath and look over at Aurora. I needed to escape who I am to be here, but I am finished trying to escape, trying to become someone I am not. Tears begin to stream down my cheeks. Who am I? I am a filler, a third-generation filler from Phil City 1. I take one step closer to the camera and stare straight into its eye. The strange feeling begins to burn in my chest like a fire, and now I know what it is. Pride. Yes, I am Paper Faris. I am a filler, and I am proud. Proud of myself. Proud of my family. Proud of my people, the people of the Phil Cities. Hardworking, loyal, and generous people who provide the fuel for this country and eliminate its waste. These people who you don't know, who you may look down on, who don't have a voice. These people are my family. Where did that come from? Alien words coming from my mouth. But they feel right. Like I'm telling the truth. Finally. In my mind, I reach through the camera into my family's living room and hug all of them at once. Everyone in Phil City. In all the Phil Cities. My mother and Voom Voom. I hug them all. I look up, now back in my actual reality. It's dark and silent. No one cheers. I can literally hear crickets off in the distance. Did anyone hear me? Larson gently takes back the microphone, beams into the camera.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. What a night. Tune in tomorrow as the 3 remaining teams begin competing in stage 3. Back to school.
Ted cuts the camera, and Larson lowers his voice.
My office. Tomorrow morning.
He walks away, towards the third transport, and I can hear him say the words even though he doesn't.
Strike 3.